This podcast is supported by The Real Real. You know what I love most about the holidays? Giving gifts. But not just any gifts. Real gifts. Thoughtful gifts. Oh my God, how did you know gifts? That's why I love gift shopping with The Real Real. The Real Real is the most trusted name in authenticated luxury resale. And it's a holiday shopping secret I'm going to let you in on. Whether it's a surprisingly affordable pristine condition bag for your BFF, a vintage find that's cool enough for the Gen Zer in your life, or even something your impossible to shop for dad will love. Get used to saying, I found it on The Real Real. Seriously, with over 10,000 new arrivals dropping every day from brands like Gucci, Fendi, Prada, Louis Vuitton, Tiffany & Co., and Cartier, there's guaranteed to be something for everyone on your list. Oh, and did I mention that everything's up to 90% off retail?
Get $25 off your first purchase at TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com to get your $25 off. TheRealReal.com.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Like no other. These are the songs of our heart.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Songs of Our Lives. I'm Brad Rose. I'm an artist, a composer, a writer, the founder of Foxy Digitalis, and someone who thinks about music and sound far more than is healthy. Each week, I invite on a guest to talk about the songs and the music that has meant a lot to them and left its mark. Previous guests include Ryan Sawyer, White Boy Scream, Claire Say, Thor Harris, a lot of people. Whole lot of people. This week, I am so excited to have Chris Williams on the show. Chris has got a new album out, just came out last week, called Odu Vibration 2. That's it. It's on AKP, great label. Great record, man. So Chris is among many things. He's a trumpet player. He is a composer. He does ambient electronic music experiment, but he's also plays in different jazz ensembles. I mean, he does so much stuff. He was on that Remembrance Quintet record with who was all in that, like Daniel Carter, Luke Stewart, Chester Holmes, and Jamal Moore. That came out, a couple years ago. He did a killer record with Patrick Chiarishi. But anyway, we're gonna talk about Odu, the new record, which, again, I'm simplifying here. This is much more of this, but it's among my favorite, if not my favorite, like ambient record this year. I put it on a lot and I just kind of get lost in it. It's I don't know. It's a really special record. It's got Clea Vandiver and Patrick Chiarishi on it. Hell of a record. And I don't know. I'm a big fan of what Chris does, and I was really excited when he agreed to do the show. Couple quick notes, programming notes. We had technical difficulties midway through, so there's a little musical interlude for that, and then we didn't really lose much in the conversation, but we still don't even know what happened. But full episode, it's all good. Second, thank y'all for listening. Please leave a rating, a review, subscribe, wherever you listen to podcasts, all those things. Help get this in more people's eyes or more people's ears. And I think this show's really fucking good and I want people to hear it. So that's that. And, beyond that, you could join patreon.com/foxdigitalis. Little as $3 a month. You get ad free episodes. You get them a little bit early and they're longer. There's a whole extra section. And that ongoing support means the world. Everybody who signed up, I appreciate you so, so much. But I know it's rough out there right now. So, you know, thanks for listening regardless. And yeah, this episode rules. Y'all will enjoy it. My guest today is a composer, a musician, an artist, an educator, an improviser. I could go on. It's Chris Williams. Welcome to the show. Woo!
Oh, man. So happy to be here. Brad, thank you.
So, you got a new record.
I was just going to say, I've been listening to so many episodes the last, like, week, and I really love this podcast. Awesome. So, thanks.
Oh, man. I'm glad. Thank you for listening. That means a lot. Well, you've got a new record coming out. I guess in a few days of when we record this, called Odu Vibration 2. It's on the AKP label. I always want to say AKP, and that doesn't make any sense. But I want to start with, so, because this really grabbed me and I keep thinking about it, this description of Odu as the process of unraveling, and where, like, each vibration must unravel anew. That, like, it's been living in my head. That phrase, it's just been, like, living in my head since I got this promo. Can you kind of take me inside what, like, that feels like for you as a composer or, like, a musician?
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of started thinking about this Odu concept as, like, a house or a world within to place a lot of different ideas within that. As long as I call it Odu, there's some relation, so I don't have to be too direct in how the piece manifests or how any of the pieces are talking to each other. It's just they're all housed under this kind of world. And the Vibration series is the first one that I've been working on, and it's, you know, this one is two. One was a piece that I did with International Contemporary Ensemble, I guess back in 2022. And it was a piece for bass clarinet. No, I'm totally messing this up. Bassoon and voice. It was the amazing Rebecca Heller and Faye Victor. And I had help making this kind of light sculpture that they performed with. And the Vibration series is really just about how are these sculptural elements vibrating with these sonic elements. I'm just really curious about placing two things next to each other and seeing how they're resonating in space. So specifically when talking about the Vibration series, it's kind of like, I love this Bill Dixon kind of quote about the further you abstract from something, the closer you're getting to the actual thing. Kind of this distillation. And I feel like that's what I'm trying to get to with Vibration. It's like, how can I get these things that seem so disparate, this physical object and these kind of like wiggly lines in air, to resonate in a way where I can actually see that they are overlapping, and what is that overlap? So this kind of unraveling is really just a, like, almost, I wouldn't say an experiment, but it's something that I'm looking for answers through the process, rather than necessarily like coming and being like, here's my thing. You know, it's it's really, I'm as curious as you know, whoever ends up listening to the work, you know.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. With this piece, it talks about, like, the image of imagining a descent into a cave, or descent into an imagined cave. I think that was the thinking about sort of the spatial element. You were kind of talking about this too a little bit, but, like, so, like, when you're composing these things, like, you know, when you're writing these pieces, do you like visualize, you know, these spaces, whatever these spaces are, or, like, I'm just, like, thinking about the cave thing, like the physicality of it. And you were kind of talking about, like, the resonances of it, like how those, the physical properties sort of translate into choices you're making.
Yeah, absolutely. I think with this one, yes. With past pieces, no. This is kind of, I think, a new process where I really try to because basically just kind of through the nature of where my life was at that point, I hadn't actually had the opportunity to do this cave research that I'd wanted to do before writing the piece to then perform it. So I was kind of like, okay, well, let me try to place myself into what I think I might experience and go on this journey through an imagination that's, and not take it as kind of this like fantasy or anything, but really try to preconceive as much as you can, you know, what this wet, dark place might be, or what time of the day I might go in here. And it kind of naturally led into a bit of this hint of a narrative that comes through a little bit in the writing, which I also don't work super directly with narrative until this. And it's been really great, because now I've actually had a chance to go and do some research in caves and like do some field recording and get that experience, and kind of now have this like before and after effects that's now influencing my own experience with this piece. You
know, that's really cool.
Giving new answers to it. So it's been a joy to just kind of like, all right, let me imagine into the future, and then let me actually do it, and kind of like treat those both as real experiences.
That's awesome. That's cool too. I can't wait to hear like some of those cave field recordings work their way into something in the future, maybe.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I'm excited about some crazy bugs, man.
Really. Oh man, caves freak me out.
Yeah, like, I mean, it freaked me out too. That was one of the main reasons why I wanted to do this. I was like, man, I'm scared of this. I'm really, if it gets under my skin, I'm not, you know, I'm afraid of the dark, all the things,
right? Right.
And I felt like it was something that, you know, was different from things that I've wanted to explore in music and art in the past, which is like very related to my own like personal family things, or things that are really kind of the me, of the thing that's like my actual lived experience. And this cave thing just feels like a primal. I'm just a human being that's afraid of the dark, that's afraid of what might be in there. I don't have this experience. Let me see.
Yeah, that's super. I mean, I think that's like super powerful too. And just the idea of like, there's this thing that I'm afraid of, that, and I'm gonna just head straight through the middle of it. Like, that's the world we live in right now, a little bit, you know. I got a lot I could say about that, but that's for another podcast. Sure.
That's real quick before we good Gemini.
Exactly. The good Gemini. before we get into the songs, I did want to quickly ask, just because, so you work with Patrick Chiarishi, and I can't remember how Kalia
Vandermeer.
I always mess up her name.
No one.
Patrick's been on this show twice, working on getting Kalia on the show. People I love very much and their music. Can you just talk about working with them on this, like playing this piece with them, and how, just how like hearing that, like playing, how that sort of even influenced the piece at the end?
So much. I mean, I really wrote with them in mind. It was like really special that I actually was able to get them, because there was a moment where I was worried whether or not Patrick might be in town or Kalia is available. You know, everybody's busy working with some really great musicians, and writing for them just felt right. So I kind of continued on that path of hoping, you know, that I would be able to get them. Patrick's a dear, dear friend. And when I used to live in LA, he was really just like such a great resource as a born and bred LA person. And Kalia being here in New York, just having such an amazing career and really kind of shining in her own way. It's been beautiful to just like be around that energy. And so to have them specifically, it felt a bit like a kinship, as I see them both as people that are really approaching their instruments as true like manifestations of their voice. Patrick just like, I can't say enough about him, but really just has exploded the saxophone and in a really unique way that I think only we can do. And Kalia's just tone and breath and patience on the instrument is something that I aspire to. And so it was kind of like this thing where I wanted to be around people that I felt were going in with the same impulse in mind, approaching their instrument practice.
This podcast is supported by The Real Real. You know what I love most about the holidays? Giving gifts. But not just any gifts. Real gifts. Thoughtful gifts. Oh my God, how did you know gifts? That's why I love gift shopping with The Real Real. The Real Real is the most trusted name in authenticated luxury resale. And it's a holiday shopping secret I'm going to let you in on. Whether it's a surprisingly affordable pristine condition bag for your BFF, a vintage find that's cool enough for the Gen Zer in your life, or even something your impossible to shop for dad will love. Get used to saying, I found it on The Real Real. Seriously, with over 10,000 new arrivals dropping every day from brands like Gucci, Fendi, Prada, Louis Vuitton, Tiffany & Co., and Cartier, there's guaranteed to be something for everyone on your list. Oh, and did I mention that everything's up to 90% off retail?
Get $25 off your first purchase at TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com to get your $25 off. TheRealReal.com.
And bring that into this world that also had a lot of influence from just like when I was a young kid growing up listening to Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers and just being like, wow, this three horn thing is really something. Like it's really, it's powerful. And I don't see any of us necessarily as any of those people. Like I'm not Freddie, Patrick's not Wayne, all that kind of a thing, but
sure.
There's a real sound that I wanted to kind of get towards and abstract, take away the rhythm section, take away all of that, you know, douse it in some cave reverb and see what happens, kind of a thing. And just writing the music for this one, it felt pretty easy. We were able to like get it basically in one rehearsal. We were lucky to go and go to Roulette and present the piece, and it just went incredibly. And Roulette is so generous in always doing multi-tracks of their concerts, so they offer that to all of their musicians. And I just want to take the opportunity to make something into it. It really felt special. So it's not a direct representation of what happened on stage, but there is, I would say, 75 to 80 of it is really like still just there.
It's awesome. Yeah, there is something really like the three horns thing, and it's taking it and bringing it into this different context. I think that's like one of the things that as I've listened to this album multiple times, I've thought about how it gives it such a distinct like sonic quality or like sound world. I don't know. There's something about it that it's one of those things where I was listening to it and there, I was just like, I haven't heard this before. And that is, for me, and that's like such an exciting thing. And then to really listen and then read all the stuff about it, I don't know. I think he just You really nailed it with this thing, man.
Yeah. Brad, thank you so much. And like, really, yeah. Those are some of the best words that I could hear. Of just, I really did want to make something that I hadn't heard before as well.
Yeah.
It was really kind of, let me take a swing in that direction.
Right. Yeah, it's always, you know, that can always be a terror. And again, talking about the, like, that can be a terrifying thing. Like, and then when it kind of comes off, it's like, oh shit, I just,
yeah,
I did that. All right.
Yeah. Hey, and you know, I've definitely made plenty of things I've never heard before that I never want to hear again. You know, like I'm the same thing. So it takes time to get those ones that you didn't hear before, but you actually want to hear it and you want to keep working with that. So
yeah.
So yeah, I'm excited to potentially do some more with this trio and to just like work in this kind of vibration space.
Hell yeah. Well, I don't have a good segue, so we're gonna go into a different vibration space. How about that? And as always, we're gonna start with, what is the first song that you remember?
Brad, I wanted to ask if you ever just guess these. You know, that was something that I was listening back. I was like, does Brad ever just guess? Or
sometimes I do. I'm not gonna lie. With, you know, and a little behind the curtains here for everybody listening, you sent me so many songs, I kind of gave up. So,
my apologies, man.
Now, truly. I will say, and shout out to other former guest, Jeremiah Chu, who sent me probably twice as many songs as you did. So this is...
thank God. Shout out, Jeremiah.
Yeah. That's my bad. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Well, and it's like, and I don't know how old you are. So I was like, well, I don't know. It could be this. So I don't know. So just lay it on me. Where did you come up with?
I'm a unk at heart. So, you know, you're still a young man. That was it for me. Like my dad, is a pretty obsessive music listener. And I don't say it in a way that's necessarily like, he's a music head or he has like a super wide kind of thing, but it's like, I kid you not that I have very vivid memories of driving around with my dad and listening to the exact same song upwards of 30 times in a row, you know, just not like, just run it back. Let's start it. We made it to the middle. Let's start it over. Like that kind of listening. And so to just be like, all right, what's my first? It was between that and, I don't know, some Earth, Wind, and Fire or something, just really in that like brass, like 70s, 60s, 70s. Really lush arrangements, like that was that sound is just ingrained into the back of me. And you're still a young man. I mean, Tower of Power, like incredible horn section and really inspired. I think they were kind of like where I really fell in love with trumpet playing, you know. Really specific way of playing the trumpet, and so You're Still a Young Man was big. I mean, Violistics I think are on there as well. I didn't put any Earth on the Fire, but yeah, those that kind of sound just feels like I'm a child when I hear that. I get shrunk.
Man, I love Tower of Power. They came up on I think it was maybe Charmaine Lee picked one of their songs, and I feel like they're such an underrated group. Incredible. They're so good, but yeah, their horn section, like there's like this radiance to the sound of it or something. I don't know, but like and it's still like that paired with like the vocals on this song are so like desperate and vulnerable. Oh god. It's just so like, good.
I'm really feeling like my heart is just like wrenching.
Yeah. I know.
And there, desperation is a feeling that I think doesn't get enough credit, you know, like it can be looked down on, but man, when you sing it, like that's something that you want to hear. You want to hear desperation. And it's great to have that in this track. Like it's so clear. It's kind of like unfettered desperation.
Yeah. There's no no like illusions or anything here.
Not it
like
is hiding this,
right? Oh man, such a good song. All right. Well, speaking of desperation, I don't know what's a song that'll make you cry.
I love these segues. I try. I mean, the one that really gets me that I hope I actually put on the list is Andata by Ryuichi Sakamoto. That just
is I did guess the this darkest. One, by the way. Oh my, sorry.
I mean,
it's
that's just a ball your heart out.
Like the feeling of that everything ends and everything falls apart. Like that,
and to start an album like that, just to say this is the we're gonna lead with this, and we're just really gonna set the tone. And I mean, the whole album is just a masterpiece. I can't gush enough about that man and that particular period in his life. Which, RIP. It's like I remember going to see Coda, the film that they were making around this time. And it really just, I haven't like bawled in a movie theater. I could say maybe one other time. And I was just really in tears. Yeah. And I'm sure I wasn't the only one. And then to hear the album and to just kind of, that was actually a bit of my introduction into his work. I really went backwards.
Wow.
So to like go backwards and just like go and go all the way back to like Yellow Magic and all of this kind of joy and fun. I don't know. He really kind of, for me, it's especially musically and it seems like, how he lived was like a life lived. You hear it in all of the work, like, All of the paths of life, the love sickness, the heartbreak.
It covered the breadth of human emotion, basically. Like,
absolutely.
And it's, when I think of like one, you know, I don't know, like what his discography, like one person's body of work, and that, his stands alone in a way, because it's just like it's everything. I mean, it's
especially like this kind of break when he was doing the solo stuff, when he was messing around with what's his name, I'm blanking out his name, the bass player Bill, that he was working with in the 90s a lot. But it was kind of like this really, there were some things that were starting to sound like, I want to say Seal, that kind of era. And I don't know, he still feels really like fun and joyous in this kind of like, man, I was just having that great time in the studio while I was thinking about this terrible thing that happened to me, or I was remembering this girl that I lost, and I also just like love, you know, messing around with this synthesizer that's just going to give
me,
like, exactly what it's kind of this beautiful mix in that period. I really love, but I mean, nothing beats Andata. I listened to that when I want to cry, I listen to that. When I know I need to cry, and
yeah,
and it works.
It works. Well, on the flip side, what's a song that'll put you in a better mood?
Oh, I mean, I'm sure you guess the one that I just sent you 20 minutes before this episode. which is a very specific version of I Feel Good.
Yes.
By James Brown. The original, or I wouldn't say original, but the most popular version doesn't necessarily do it for me. It's a great hit. But
yeah,
something about this version, starting off with Sex Machine. Every track starts out with this this scream of Sex Machine and just like the nastiest grooves, like the loosest, tightest band you could ever imagine. Yeah. It's really, it's just, I don't know, unparalleled.
I remember when I first heard this, it was, you know, I was very familiar with the original because they're not, or like you said, the one that everybody knows, but it just blew my mind to like, I don't know. I have such respect for someone who it's like, I'm going to take my biggest hit, like the thing that everybody knows, and I'm going to show you this whole other side of it and show you that it can be something else.
Yep.
And, it's mind blowing to me that, I mean, that just, that takes guts. Yeah. I mean,
and it's like almost that it's like it was that already. You just didn't really hear it like that. Like, yeah, right. I didn't give it to you like that. Like, it was that. I've been working on this stuff. Like,
yes,
you come to a show, you're gonna get that. Like, that's,
yeah.
And I love that about James Brown. I love that about that, like, approach to a band that's just like, the band is tight. We do arrangements all the time. We're improvising, we're stretching, we're finding new things. And, you know, the one that made it to the record is just the one that was that day.
Right.
And that, like, I'm glad that you love it, but like, we're on to this next thing. And it's the same track, but different. That shit is, I don't know, something about that was, that really, I think one of your other questions also, it kind of checked that box of where I was just like, I thought about this person differently after that. I thought about James Brown. Just so differently when I heard that track.
Yeah, for it, like, there's this, I think there's this like level of sophistication that he never has, never like, didn't ever get credit for. Like, it was it was, yeah, I mean, because it's like, yeah, I mean, there is the explosive, the raw explosiveness of James Brown that everybody knows, but it's like, man, there was so much more. Love that man.
The ocean was deep with him and that band. Really.
Yeah. Whenever the party question game, it's like, oh, if you could go back in time and see any musician living or dead live at their peak, who would it be? It's like James Brown. It's always been my answer. Because, dude, I just,
yeah.
I mean, absolutely. It's an impossible question, but. James Brown is the right answer. I'm so glad
you had the right answer too. It really is just like you would put him after any band and it would just be sad. Before any band, it would be sad. I feel
nobody
bad
wants for to it. Yeah. I mean that I had that experience on Friday. Like, Mdou Mokhtar was in town, like playing this free show downtown. And the people who booked it had this local blues band opening for them. And it was just, like, watching the opening band, I was just like, oh man, I feel bad for you guys because you don't know what's coming. And then, like, Mdou Mokhtar, they come and it's just an hour of unfettered, and like, it's just.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, if I was in that other band, I would just be like, I'm never mind, guys. Like,
just pack it up.
Yeah, just pack it up. And if you thought your friend was like doing you a solid by giving you that opening slot, man, they are not your friend.
Don't talk to them. Don't talk to them, man.
But yeah, I would never want to play with James Brown. You can't win. Like,
no. I don't want to be in his band. I want to be on the other side of that.
Yeah, exactly.
I just want to experience it and watch it. Yeah, just be just be blessed to be on the right side.
Be blessed. Yes.
All right. Well, if it's not James Brown, what is objectively the best song of all time?
Oh man,
this one. Everybody's this favorite question.
I went with All My Life by Ornette Coleman, which just I don't know. It's funny that you brought up the Charmaine Lee episode, because I was listening to that one and we did have a lot of crossover.
Yeah.
I need to talk to Charmaine and be like,
hey, yeah. When she gets back from her 6-year long tour, hey.
Yeah, who knows? I don't know. Who knows where she is? But yeah, I think Ornette is just such a true distillation of like an American musician, just like a real, really just understood so many components of what was happening in 20th century music and before, and just knew how to put it all in the same place, like kind of rinse and repeat. There were a few, I would say there, you know, he made so much music that of course there were times that felt more geared in one direction or more geared towards what he perceived as the future. But also I really think he just recognized like, this is what's happening. This is kind of like what I'm perceiving in sound. And I'm just going to like filter it through what, you know, my band at this time. And I think that that band at that time is also just so perfect. Oh. Having DiNardo in there, having, you know, having Bobby Bradford on the band, like Don Cher, like everything, Dewey, it's just
Ed Blackwell, and best Ed, drummer ever.
Literally. it's really, so I just think that I felt like All My Life, especially because of the addition of the vocalist who I'm really embarrassed to say I can't remember her name right now.
Asha Puthley.
But, Asha Puthley.
Yeah, I think that's how it's pronounced.
She's incredible. And she really understands the harmonics. She's just so locked in with kind of what's happening. And it also has this kind of like not jazz singer, yes, jazz singer feeling to it that places it into the kind of larger conversation of like, best song ever. just like it branches, you know, rather than best jazz song ever, whatever. It feels like in conversation with just popular music in that way.
Yeah.
With the addition of the vocalist. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember what I said on the Charmaine episode, because I'm pretty sure she picked this for this question. Or maybe not. I don't know. But it's like there's a handful of songs that I always think like, yeah, that's the right answer for this question. And this is one of them, because there's just something, it's this distillation. It's like all the things that make Ornette great, but then like like you said, the vocal, like that pushes it even further into like its space that I don't know, to me like it shows just how it's like everybody knows that Ornette was kind of on a different, like on a different level, but this is the song that's like, no, really. There's a reason he's like one of the great, you know, arguably the greatest American composer of ever. He's in the conversation. And
absolutely.
And just the way, like, again, like you talk about his band, and it's clear, it's knowing like, okay, I've got the best band on the planet. I'm going to use that, and I know how to use that. And most of it, I'm sure, is like, I'm not going to tell them exactly what to do because they're all the fucking best at what they do. What do I,
you know which buttons to press and which ones to just stay fully away from. He also understood, like, that this kind of very, very specific approach to, I guess, free jazz was something that, he had pioneered. He was really, just the guy at, but also like, the dude just loved melody and loved like a very specific singing that I think science fiction does such a good job of just articulating in a way that's not, it's a little less connected to some of the kind of tropes of like bebop or something that's related to that, where it's like the dude's just really singing through his horn like a blues saxophonist that he was, and he's got a vocalist that gets the music and got a great band, and but you know, he wrote a great song.
Yeah.
Technical difficulties.
All right, and we're back.
Yeah.
Okay, Ornette, the greatest. There we go. We got that out of the way.
Yeah, come on, guys. You knew it already.
Yeah. Okay, what's a song you used to love, but you've heard it recently, or you think about it now, and it doesn't really do it for you?
Ooh.
Or at least not in the same way.
Yeah. Man. I couldn't really pick a song. I picked, like, most of, maybe save for like two or three albums, most of Jay-Z's music. I really loved him when I was younger, and I think that he's such an amazing lyricist, but I don't know, there's some just like, I think some of it has to do with just real life shit, just
kind
of the billionaire aspect of it all, and just all of that, that just, it just colors the music a little too specifically for me.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's just like, I don't know, there's a couple of albums that I can still listen to, but in general, I do tend to just like skip like Jay-Z. I don't know.
The billionaire thing.
Yeah, it's
there are a couple records that I still like. I don't really listen to them, but like I don't know. Yeah, I think it really is the billionaire thing.
I think so too. I hate to, but maybe I shouldn't feel bad hating it. It's like, man, nobody should be a billionaire. Yeah. Like, what the fuck? Like, I don't need to feel bad about that.
Yeah.
I don't know. It is what it is.
It is what it is. Yeah. I don't know. Okay. Well, what's a song that
New
people?
York, so you know, if I get like shot or something like that, why? Thanks, Brad.
You know, everybody go look for biggest fan. What's the song that people hate? I don't know who they are. Maybe it's universally hated. I don't know. But anyway, you don't care. You love it.
I think that song was, maybe you guessed it already, but the Selena song, Dreaming of You.
Which, man, is,
I think just a gem.
I think it's it is.
It's like just really good production and songwriting.
Like, I know.
She sings so well. There's the voice. Whispers.
Oh. And,
you know, short bridge. Like, it's just, it's got everything for me.
I agree. I think it rules. So,
you know, everybody on this was my partner. because yeah, I just love the sauce. I'll put it on.
I just think it's a good song. And it's kind of, it's like, it's so sad though too. Like when you think, I didn't even realize that she died. It was 30 years ago now, which made, like, that made me feel old. There's another, something else you picked that made me feel really old too.
Oh no.
I can't remember what it was, but yeah. There's a lot I like about it. I'm so obsessed with like the scents. Like I'm assuming it's like a DX7 mm-hmm. or something, but like the glassy, it's one of my favorite sounds in the whole world.
It's just like, yeah, this real specific sheen that just mm-hmm. feels like it, it sounds like the twinkle of what it, when you see the sun hitting water in a very specific way,
yes.
it sounds like that. And I'm just like,
yes.
we don't necessarily do that in music anymore. Like it's not necessarily like in or whatever, but that shit hit. we yes. don't need to do it, but like they did it so well. And I love to hear, I eat it up. Like, give me a nice twinkle.
Yeah, give me a nice twinkle. Oh man, love it. It's such a good sound. We need more twinkle in our music these days.
I'm not abiding by that, but yeah,
well, yeah, I hear you. Fair. Well, it is. If it's not Dreaming of You, which could be the most romantic song, I mean, because it's pretty, you know, it's in that world. What is the most romantic song?
Man, I mean, this one, I would say I'm not somebody that listens to a lot of romantic music. So this one actually felt pretty easy. It was like, this is the song that me and my partner just like really connected on, the stylistics, Betcha by Golly Wow. I grew up with this song. Once again, it's like very, very deep in the back of my brain. And I just, when I found out that she also loved this too, it was kind of like, okay, we're gonna do this. Right? And his voice, Russell's voice is just like,
I can't even smooth describe. And just
butter, just really
yes,
like effortless. This effortlessness that I think many vocalists go for. It's like the opposite of this desperation that we were talking about earlier. It's like this man just
absolutely
wants for nothing.
Yes. It is one of the things, like, I love, it's so sentimental. But it owns it and it wears it openly so that it doesn't feel like cheesy or corny. It's so,
right up to the line of cheesy, corny.
Yes.
And just stares at it, just like stands there.
Like stares it down.
it's like, let's really unpack what is cheesy, corny. Like, I'm gonna stay here and look at you while you do that. And you're going to listen to this beautiful fucking song that is arranged perfectly and is going to just stand the test of time forever.
It's just
really
100%. Yeah. Amazing song. Oh, yeah. I love it. All right. What's a song that changed your perspective on an artist, either for better or for worse?
Let me see. Which one did I pick for this? I think I had Shell of Light on that by Burial, which it didn't change it in this way that I went from liking Burial's music to not, or from not to liking it. It was just kind of like, I was already a fan. I already loved the energy, the vibe, like such a specific, really like gritty, textured English sound. I don't know, UK sound. I still love to this day. And hearing Shell of Light, I think it was when I looked at the lyrics, and it was kind of, and once again, just like this other question that maybe we talk about, just like when you hear the lyrics and you realize what they're actually saying and it's different than what you were feeling. That was kind of what I experienced in this, where it's like this, he did this rip of this, I think it's this girl from YouTube or Napster. It was like an early internet thing that was this girl just singing a somewhat devotional song, and she was singing her heart out, and he just ripped it and put it right on the end of Shell of Light. And it's just so, it like, I thought it was really related to this kind of similar desperation, like, come closer to me, like, but then it just kind of flips the song, and it has this devotional aspect, just like, come closer to God, or come closer to something that's out, that's not necessarily to, like, this human want anymore. And this track just really shifted for me with that.
When I was listening to this yesterday, it shocked me that this came out in 2007. This isn't actually the one that made me feel old, but like, I still can't believe this came out in 2007. Like, this could have come out yesterday, and I would believe you.
And people would rave about this.
Yeah. And maybe I'm wrong. I don't think I'm wrong. I think it was 2007, but it's old. Jesus Christ. I love the vocals on it. It feels like, I don't know. It's like holding on to light while everything is dissolving around you or something. It's like what the, it's just,
it paints such a like very specific, mood of a, I don't know, kind of like somebody in a messy room just by himself, just finish bawling, and you're just kind of sitting in it.
Yes.
It's me.
Great track. Well, speaking of words and lyrics, what are your favorite lyrics?
I'm so bad at this. I'm so bad at this. Right? Like, I just don't. Lyrics, they just don't stick. It's a problem. Every track that I picked on here that had lyrics is my favorite lyric. You know, it's kind of like that thing where it's like, because they stayed with me. But maybe to just bring a new one in, I think I put One Beer by Enough Doom, and I just think it's just, you know, the lyrics of our generation.
Right. Like,
full stop.
It's a stand-in for, like, every MF Doom track.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, which is legit. Like, it's...
He really just, he never misses. He never missed, not once, and just, like, the wordplay, the humor, the levity, the brevity, it's all there in his.
Yeah.
And it's just such a tragedy for me as somebody that I would never call myself a hip hop head, even though I love the music. I just not as versed in it, but I feel like if there was anybody that I just really wish that I could just really fucking remember their lyrics, it would be MF Doom. Because he's just so deep, right? It's just, they're funny. Yeah. They're funny. Yeah. They're hilarious. They're really witty. And I don't know. I connect with the rhythm of it all.
Yeah. I mean, thinking about when we were talking with like Sakamoto, how his body, like it covers like all things. I feel like Doom does that with his words too. Yeah. It's like the breadth of human existence is covered in one way or another.
He's got a bar somewhere that's dealing with exactly what you're talking about. Exactly. And it's gonna make you, like, while you're crying about it, it's gonna make you laugh. And it's like, and you're gonna be surprised, you're gonna be impressed, and it, all of the things that I think do that hip hop specifically does so well in just like a really skilled way.
Yeah. This is the one that this one is 20 years old, and that blew my mind. I was like, Jesus. Okay. Because I remember when this came out, and that's, I don't know. I'm an old man. on to better things. What song have you or can you listen to the most?
Oh, yeah. I Want to Be Where You Are by Marvin Gaye. Oh. It's 1 minute and 30 seconds of perfection. It gives me everything I want. Once again, the whispers are back. He's like talking. There's this other thing happening where it's like the sound world, the sonic kind of like universe opens past just like it's a song. And I don't know. It's just that whole album, just perfection.
Yeah.
And that track is almost like the entire album in a minute and 30 seconds. I don't know how he did that.
I don't either. It's one of those things that, it seems impossible. There's like, how is this real? Because
absolutely,
I don't know. It's it's only a minute and a half, but it feels like so much more, and it's like almost a meditation, not even a song. I don't even know. Like,
it's absolutely. It's really like this rumination, like he's just ruminating on the idea, like the concept of the album. It's like you're sitting there with him and he's just like, this is the album. And he gives you a minute and 30 seconds. And then he fleshes it out from there. And it's kind of like, holy shit. I just want to kind of live in that world so much. And I don't always want to go to every little part of the world, so sometimes I just want to go directly to the source, and I'm like, that's where it is. That's just, I could listen to this 20 times in a row.
Driving
like as the album, you know, it's like it's
right
20 times in a row. It's like now it's a 30 minute track, and I could have just listened to the album
20 times in a row, driving around the car with your dad, right?
Literally. Something got in. Something was passed down.
What is the song you most recently fell in love with?
Man, it was hard to pick between these two, so I'm going to shout them both out. But
okay,
the first is Nine Jewel Prayer by Ganavia. Ganavia, just. That song, that particular track, it's up there with the kind of making me cry, like the fact that it's her parents that she's with, and that it just has this reprise that she keeps coming back to that just gets better every time I hear it. I just love it so much. It's gorgeous.
Absolutely. So this would be my most recent song that song I most recently fell in love with, because it happened like yesterday, because I'd never heard this before. And I immediately bought like the record. I was like, okay, I'm utterly, totally floored me.
It transported me in a way that I just think it was like driving, and I literally pulled over to just like listen to the track. It was really.
This is like one of those things where she is channeling something from like another plane of existence or something, like something 100%. Eternal and amazing.
I just feel so like fortunate to be able to like return to it.
Often. Yes.
You know, that's kind of how I feel about it. It's kind of appreciative that it exists in a form that I could just go there.
Yeah. Yes. 100%.
And the other one that I have to shout out is No Sound by Avon and Jessica. That track sends me in such a specific way, and they have this kind of very specific texture to them that was why it was so difficult to pick between the two. Avon and Jessica are also dear friends, and I love them to death, and just like I love the music that they make. And it's specifically Azure is just a gorgeous album.
It's, yeah, this, like, there's something, this piece is somehow weightless, like, yet full of gravity. And I don't, it's one of, it's like, I don't know how they did that, but the,
so perfect.
Their work together and their, I mean, and their solo work, both of them have new records coming out next month that are, shout out Co Records. Anyway, yes.
Our man doing the Lord's work.
Oh, unbelievable! But yeah, No Sound is. I don't know. This is, yeah, it's a piece of music I return to a lot because it's just, yeah.
I don't know. Yeah,
it's.
I know.
It just is.
I love this, like, weightless, but grab it. Because when the double stops come in on the viola, I just lose it.
Yes.
And just the voice. It stands out on the album as this kind of, like, it almost feels like, because the album is so dense and so such a specific mood, feels like a bit of a reward. It's like, wow, you really just, like, gave me something so pure in this, like, something so pure and so, like, specifically digestible to the, like, American sensibility of, like, music. It really kind of, like, comes back to that after this exploration into a lot of this, like, Persian, North Indian, South Indian music, I believe. And it's just like, wow, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, I love the two of them. Okay, last two questions. What is the song that means the most to you? And it's not necessarily because of the song itself, but because you associate it with something or someone or a certain memory. And yeah.
Yeah, I put this Flying Lotus track on for this one. Me yesterday recorded. And It's weird because it's not like, it's not my favorite Philo song. It's not necessarily my favorite song, but it has this, like, really strong association of just when I started to get into electronic music, which was actually pretty late. I would say I was 25 or something. And was just like, kind of falling in love with, specifically because I was still living on the West Coast, falling in love with specifically, like, this brain feeder era that was happening. Mm-hmm. And, you know, kind of when you only knew Thundercat because he was on all of the Flying Lotus records, or, you know, just like you heard stories about Austin Peralta, you know, and you were just singing DMT songs. I have never even done DMT, they created such a world around them, also that just, like, speaks sonically. And I think Flying Lotus for me was just such a great way into having elements of, like, cinematic scoring, having kind of a reverence for this, like, specific era of Herbie Hancock, having kind of, like, the anime thing. Like, there's this, like, humor to it. I kind of, after the fact, realized that I had been listening to Flying Lotus since I was very young, when I was watching anime, when I was watching, he would do the kind of, like, background music to this program called Adult Swim on Cartoon Network. And I was, like, 12 years old, and I was watching this, and I always loved the music. I was always like, yeah, this is amazing. I was 12. I don't know where to find the fit. So I'll just, like, watch it tomorrow. Like, it was so good. So I just keep watching it. And then fast forward, 15, 20 years, and I'm still listening to this. So, you can figure it out. You got me. It really hits, like, a very specific chord, and so much admiration.
Yeah, man, that's awesome. I I really like this track. It's not my favorite Fly Low track or anything either, but it's really good. Yeah. But yeah, it totally makes sense. Like that sort of context, that makes so much sense.
But I will say to go back to the track, the reason I actually picked this track was because of the form of the track. I love this kind of like, here's what I'm making. Here's like a fully realized kind of track that's exploring a certain thing, and then just like a hard cut into a different world. And that's something that I've always loved. I've always kind of searched for things that do that and that kind of deal with that like paste or that like color. I wouldn't say full collage, but just like aren't afraid to just like, you know, press a button.
Yep.
And Fly Low, he riffs on that in this track. I think it's so perfect. So yeah,
totally.
That was why I picked this particular one.
Because, that makes sense.
There are many, many great Fine Lotus songs.
Yeah, and I love that too. I love when tracks do that, where it's just like all of a sudden you're just, oh, we're going this way now, and still in a way that makes some amount of sense, because it, like, absolutely. I've heard those where it's like, okay, this is just two separate tracks that you literally
splice together. Yeah, it's like whatever.
Whereas like this, it. There is some amount of, okay, yeah, that works.
I really, you know, like, I think he's so kind of visual and so like cinematic in his way. I think of it as like you're coming from the depths of the ocean and you like are swimming through it. And once you break through the water, it's like you're just dropped into something else.
Yeah, and exactly.
Still in the water, it still feels like the same mood, still feels like the same energy, but your experience of it is so different.
Yeah, exactly. All right, at this moment in time anyway, but maybe this is always your answer for this question, what is your favorite song?
I hate this question, Brad, but but I actually this one, I would say this thing that I'm going to say is my favorite song feels in contest, actually. So funny. It's so wrong. With the best song of all time, which is the Earl Sweatshirt track, The Cow Face, featuring Vince Staples. That it's just like a fucking bang. It's just, it's dropping.
It goes so hard.
it's unbelievable. I never heard Vince rap like that. The way they do this back to back flow is just immaculate. The beat, Alchemist is on.
Alchemist under. Production. Oh my
god, it's disgusting.
When
it's all, you know, it's like that. You have another question. It's like, what's your hype song? It's like, it's so funny because like such a moody, dark song is my hype song. Like, this is the shit.
That makes sense.
You listen to it and just like trying to get locked in. It's like, I'm trying to.
Yes. Man. Yeah, it's so good. Have you seen the video for it? I love the video.
Oh,
because Alchemist is just hanging out in the background. Just like, but that's just how you know. Because he's just there, he's rolling joint.
It's like so hanging good. Out. The colors, the different like black and whites they're doing with it. It's just man. And Earl is just man. I think he's one of one, and I've been listening to him since even a little bit before Doris, and it was just like, This feels different. I love it. I don't know what to do with it. And he's just gotten so much better. It's kind of insane to just see how much deeper the work and how much more concise it's gotten. Work coming from Doris, which can, you know, really stretches and has that young energy, where he's just like, now, man, this last one that he put out, it's like 21 minutes. And it's just perfect. The album has no fat at all. So
it's
The Caliphate, though, it's like, it's the deepest, darkest, fly-ish shit that I've heard. I don't even know. I'm about to go listen to it right now.
Yeah, exactly. Oh man. Well, this was way too much fun.
Super.
Technical difficulties aside, but
yeah.
Odu Vibration 2 is out on September 26th, this Friday, which when this airs will be last Friday, but whatever. You got any shows or anything coming up you want to mention?
Yeah. I'm doing a tour just around this album that we're doing like a listening party at Silence Please on October 4th. And then in New York, we're doing a show, like a release show with Netty Netty and Gladstone Deluxe at Light and Sound Design on October 11th. So we'll look to that one. Also going to be in Philly, going to be in DC at Rhizome, going to be in Baltimore at the Red Room. So, I'm going to be at Cubby's in Kingston. So all that's like somewhere. So these will pop up. I'm going to do it solo. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Great.
Awesome. Go out and see it, everybody. Buy the record. Once again, thank you to Chris Williams. Woo! Go listen to his new record. Seriously. If you haven't heard it, go listen to it. Now you're done. It'll make your day. Listen to his picks, playlist in the show notes. I don't know. That's all I got, man. Thanks for listening. And in the meantime, keep on listening to whatever the hell you want.